Okay.
But at the time I was picking law, I had more of a sense of justice than money. ChatGPT, what it will do, it will give you the basic, mm-hmm. right? But you see, a contract is supposed to be specific to your issue, your industry, the work at hand.
Yeah.
And there will be some things that ChatGPT can't foresee.
Yeah.
That's what a lawyer does for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Financially Incorrect. I am your host, Barack, and this podcast is sponsored by FX Pesa. Please do remember to check out their links. They're in Forex right now. If you are suffering with the Kenya shilling or other local currencies, you might be able to find dollar solutions with FX Pesa. So please do check them out. Remember, this podcast is around financial, literacy as a whole. We are trying to talk about very serious financial topics, but in a very cheeky way. And try and have fun as we do it as well. This is, I think, our third or fourth episode of the year. Lost track now. And today I have Liz Lenger with me, an African intellectual property lawyer who wears many hats, sits on at least one tribunal. I was going to say a couple, but I know at least one, a couple of boards. Lives in Malindi now. I think you're at the stage of what they call a self-actualization. lives in Malindi. She came in Nairobi yesterday for a couple of board meetings, and she was like, yeah, I'll stop by Financially Incorrect and see how we're doing. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you so much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let me first of all shout out your outfit, and more specifically your tie. We're having a chat just before this. In my older career as a lawyer, I also collected multiple ties, and Liz was telling me that her tie is older than I am.
Yeah.
As old as her. She got it from her dad.
Yeah, it used to be one of my dad's ties.
Yeah.
Yeah. He passed on. So these are some of the things I just remember. You know, when someone passes on, then you remember and reflect the kind of influence they had in your life.
Yeah.
And I know my style. I got my style from my dad.
Yeah.
So I even realize even the poses I make, I'm like, yeah, this is still my dad. When someone asks you at the time, you're like, that used to be my dad's thing.
Yeah. But it's subconscious.
Yeah, it's subconscious. Yeah. No, it's subconscious. It's later on, like when my husband pointed out, I was like, oh, yeah, I used to see daddy do that. So.
Yeah, I think we all do those things.
Yeah, and I try to look like money as well, even the sweater.
Everything. Do you dress like this in Malindi?
No, in Malindi, I do a more laid back, outfits, more summer.
Yeah.
Try to be professional and playful.
But, yeah.
You know, I run my office from Malindi, but my HQ is Nairobi.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
so everything is digitally. So
okay.
I have fashion freedom.
Yeah.
To wear as I feel.
As you feel on that specific day.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we get into it, today Bloomberg released an article today saying that the Kenyan currency is the second worst performing currency in Africa as at January 2024. How does that make you feel as a Kenyan paying all these taxes?
You guys, I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me feel sad and confused. And I think for me, the day I knew things were bad. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in Addis for the Hub of Africa Fashion Week.
Yeah.
And I went to one of their local markets, Shiromeda, to buy some clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they told me the price and I withdrew chums, I was like, when I checked the bank balance, I was like, wait a minute, are you telling me the birr is stronger than the Kenyan shilling?
Yeah.
I was in shock. Then when I went online, we were at 160 against the dollar.
Yeah.
I was like, bus.
We are in
so
trouble.
Now in my mind, for someone who also, I have to invest in my business.
Mm-hmm.
A chunk of my clients are usually foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
That means a lot of foreign travel.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, I used to have the comfort that the Kenya shilling is doing well. Like, mm-hmm. at least
in the African context.
I can feel like my sweat versus how much I'm making,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're not doing so badly.
Yeah.
But now I'm worried. Honestly, mm-hmm. I'm worried.
Yeah.
In terms of the investments I'm looking at to make this year,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, yo, I better make some money back.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I have to start charging maybe in dollars and figure that out.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't lie, it's scary. It also means I am a fan of luxury goods,
mm-hmm.
so now I have to cut down.
that means
my jewelry, bags,
right,
clothes.
Right.
I have to figure that out.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, that's therapy, man. That's how you go through the hard times, or at least I do. So
yeah, I mean, and they're projecting that, you know, by the end of the year it can get to 210. I think Collins was saying that some analysts were saying that by mid year it could get to 180, and this morning I was I was Googling myself and I was like, what does Kenya need to do to change the trajectory of the USD against the Kenyan shilling? And I don't really, you know, don't think I've quite fully understood what exactly we need to do. But I really hope that
someone will do like an article or people will just say, you know what, if Gava did 1, 2, 3,
yeah,
then maybe it would make sense. Because I feel like sometimes we are also always just criticizing government, but we never give solutions.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it's time we started giving solutions.
Yeah.
So, you know, whoever is, you know, financially up that's listening or watching today, I hope they do something. They help us.
That's true, actually. And I don't know. I don't know. I guess we'll see. And hopefully we make it to the end of the year just fine, right?
We keep praying.
So, yeah, let's get into it, I guess. Let's get into your story. How did you get into law in the first place?
Well, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. I wanted to be an artist, an all-rounded musician, singer, dancer, actor, the whole shebang. But of course, nobody believed in the arts. My mm-hmm. parents were very skeptical, especially my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So
why were they skeptical?
They didn't see any money, and then mm-hmm. of course for any mom who has a teenage daughter,
mm-hmm.
they're always thinking entertainment equals promiscuity and half nakedness and all these things.
Is it not?
It depends on how you package yourself, you know. But you see, unfortunately, because that's what sells, that's all people see. Like they don't see the other more professional, put together artists and whatnot. So it wasn't something that they were willing to entertain. At some point, I toyed with journalism. Mm-hmm. Journalism was like, it was either journalism or law at some point. The time I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, I was seeing a lot of injustices. When I would watch the news,
mm-hmm.
and you can see, you know, either it's a rape issue, someone has been mugged. And I was like, what's wrong with the system? Maybe I'll be a lawyer, you know? And whenever I tell my folks that, I think that's what they really took to heart.
Mm-hmm.
So when Catholic University had introduced law, it's my mom who saw it in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Alliance doing French. I was doing my diplôme de langue.
Mm-hmm.
Then my mom calls and she says, have you seen the newspapers? Like, I've not yet seen the newspaper until I come home. And she said, Catholic University has introduced law, so you have to figure out how you go and get your results slip.
Okay.
And after that, my mom was with me bumper to bumper until
I applied. Did you not want to explore University of Nairobi?
So because the threshold for University of Nairobi was really high.
Yeah.
But at least I had qualified.
Right.
Now you see, you know, you're competing with all these others. So JAB, because at our time we had what was called JAB.
I don't know JAB.
JAB was like the top performing students. So you get to the public university, you're sponsored because you have that top mark. Then now the rest, if you qualified, but, you know, so you can enter para or something.
Class
is up to capacity with the JAB students.
Yeah.
So when Catho came, my mom was like, we're doing this. I was like, Nikki, give me time to think. Maybe I might want journalism. I was like, no. I was like, okay.
Do you think in any way, sort of form, their drive for you to pursue this was financially driven?
Actually, no. Because I think they had seen that passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me at that time, I was like 50-50. You know, when you're just fresh from high school, you just want a taste of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is giving you their opinion. And there's also how now you see life after school. You know, you're watching news. Like, honestly, at the time, news anchors were so shiny to me. So I was like, I might want to be an anchor.
Right.
But then I remembered when I was in high school, one time I tried to do a screen test.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I the pressure of just reading news was much. So I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll just do law. Let's see what law will do.
Okay.
So I was flexible.
So even their push wasn't really like financially driven for you.
Yeah, for me it wasn't really.
Yeah,
there was an element of prestige for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, when I used to see, I hear lawyers. I had not even interacted with a lawyer at the mm-hmm. time ever, but you know, watching Ally McBeal mm-hmm. again, my age is showing.
I watched Boston Legal.
You know, and watching the likes of like Eugene and whatnot, just seeing how they carry themselves, how they dress. It's like, okay, I think I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think Boston Legal is better than Suits.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh, Suits. OMG.
Collins, what do you think? Yeah.
Suits.
Have you watched Boston Legal, Chico? Do you know what Boston Legal is?
Oh, it's much better, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, when I teach my students, I always tell them, please disregard Suits. The legal profession is nothing. Because, like, sometimes even when your students are writing their arguments,
right,
you can see they have a spectre in them trying to come through. Like, no.
That's not how you get your point across.
You know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Even when they address you,
right,
they're trying to, you know, chest thump,
yeah,
throw their ego that, around.
I'm, yeah,
like, boss.
No, yeah.
It's about mutual respect.
Wow, interesting. Okay. So, I mean, if... And I guess I'm not driving this point home in terms of, like, I don't want it to be purely like a financial thing, but mm-hmm. what do you then think your parents taught you about money? Was it important for you to be able to, because if you're saying you initially wanted to pursue like a more creative career and they were like, no, was it a fear of you will not be able to sustain yourself and, you know, pay your bills, etc., or was it more of, you know, if you pursue a more stable career or stable industry, then you'd be able to achieve a lot more financial success, like your, I guess, your trajectory and potential is a lot higher?
Well, I think with my folks, we never had like money conversations per se,
mm-hmm.
but I just used to watch how my parents would tiptoe around finances and
okay.
whatnot. And I always wondered how it felt to be rich.
Okay.
But at the time I was speaking law, I had more of a sense of justice than money. Then when I started studying law and learning about, you know, the kind of numbers that, you know, lawyers are making in terms of bank, I was like, oh, okay, I see. Maybe I can. Mm-hmm. I can do it. That's what I want. I thought I would be a human rights lawyer mm-hmm. at first. Then I realized it was very crowded, mm-hmm. too many human rights guys. I was like, how will I stand out?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Katho, we had a lot of entertainment activities, mm-hmm. cultural day, whatnot, Miss Katho. So I tried that out. Then I was Miss Katho.
Mm-hmm.
Then with that, I started doing a lot of mainstream modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Had a record deal, fell mm-hmm. flat, but... it was an awesome learning curve
for what me. Happened?
The contract.
Yeah.
The contract was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at how the ecosystem also was not prepared in terms of legal understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why when you look at in the mid-2000s, when we had a lot of the pop star type of shows and competitions,
mm-hmm.
you know, most of them never thrived because it's understanding the legality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason why the Pop Idols and The Voice are really strong, it's because of the kind of contracts that they have and how they deal with artists. And also they commit to what they promise.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. we had cases of winners are promised something and
it falls don't get through. It, right.
Never happens. So that's what happened in our situation.
In your contract, are you looking at this from as you're a student with, you know, a legal student with legal student eyes? Or do you have a lawyer who's...
At the time, it was a student with legal eyes.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And when we had been recording for like 6 months, no contract, right? Mm-hmm. So we were a girl group. So mm-hmm. I tell my fellow girls, I'm like, hey, we need to tell our manager we need a contract. So we hollered our manager. She pushes, we get the contract. I look at the contract. I'm like, guys, this contract is not making sense. Mm-hmm. I had my pencil. I had mm-hmm. notes.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually even requested for a meeting with a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized the contract was missing words like copyright ownership,
mm-hmm.
You know, issues of distribution. Like there were some things that were missing.
Yeah.
So I figured this contract is not, it doesn't feel like it mirrors the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, because of how they had been, you know, dragging the project, there was that, we could see something wasn't right.
Yeah.
So I think even them, the investor had changed their mind and whatnot. But for me, at least, it shed some light in terms of the hard work that the artists are always putting into
yeah.
their work, into their craft. Because yeah. you can imagine you're recording until like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Then at 8 a.m. I'm in class. Because mm. we had times like that. You know, you've been booked a slot. There was
the
one
studio,
time we were recording with Homeboys. Musioks was with Homeboys at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the most sought-after producers,
yeah.
right? So he had a whole timetable of artists.
Yeah.
So you get the slot that's available.
Yeah.
And our slot was like Uko midnight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So after everyone, so we get there early, you carry your homework, your assignments, do them somewhere, whatever, as you're seeing these other celebs checking in, record, leave, and whatnot. Strike conversations with some of them. So that really, for me, was, it's the kind of experience that money will never buy.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, when I would meet them, I'd be like, yeah, so-and-so, why don't you have, do you have a lawyer? Why don't you have a lawyer? So we'd have those conversations. And that's how now my love for IP was born.
Okay.
Because I was like, if you're here until like 5 a.m., why are you not rich?
Yeah.
And people are in the club dancing.
Yeah.
You know, we are watching music shows and whatnot. It's like something is not right.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, then that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And to figure out why is it not right, make sure the money's in the right pockets.
Yeah.
And the economy makes sense, the creative economy makes sense.
Okay. There's two things you've said I want to ask you about. One, which is the, why are you being paid at this time when you're recording for the 6 months, why are you being paid any money at all?
We were waiting for the money, which never came.
So you were recording in faith?
We were recording in faith.
Okay.
And
okay.
I remember at that time, I was like, I could walk away
mm-hmm.
and never learn from anything here.
Mm-hmm.
Or I stick it out
yeah.
and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I said, let me stick it out and see what happens. I will get something out of it. It may not be money, but I will get something out of it. So for me, I was flexible. I was loose.
Okay. And the second thing is, this is the second time you've used the word rich. And the first time you're talking about you wondered, I guess when you're growing up, you wondered what it was like to be rich. What do you think made you even think about that? Did you think that you guys were not rich?
Well, you know, African parents, they're mm-hmm. always frugal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always about bargaining. In my head, I'm like, if you're rich, you don't bargain.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now later on, I learned that millionaires are the guys who bargain like mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at that time, yeah. that was my perception of being rich. Mm-hmm. I rock into a shop,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, this is 5,000. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and here's a tip.
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where do you think that came from? Was it movies?
I think
or just
movies.
Your imagination?
Movies and imagination.
Yeah.
Like one of the shows I really like to watch at the time was like Sex and the City and seeing mm-hmm. that flashy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in my mind, you know, seeing yeah, like those
why
characters.
Why isn't your mom not going
yeah,
to stores
like,
and
why
just...
are you not? Are you not buying us clothes?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think for me, and then there was this thing when we were kids, you know, like when I was a kid, our parents were the kinds who would go buy fabric, they come and make clothes for you.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, I was like, Kwani, we are broke. What? Now when I think about it,
yeah.
I actually want to learn how to sew.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I get outfits and garments and I want to alter or just
yeah.
make something from scratch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, I should have paid attention when my mom was on the sewing
yeah.
machine.
Interesting. So what do you think then, I guess if you look back now, what do you think your parents taught you about money? I know you've already said you didn't have any direct conversations.
Yeah.
But indirectly, what do you think they taught you about money?
They taught me about saving,
mm-hmm.
How to use money prudently. And just making sure you have money for a rainy day.
Okay.
That you never find yourself in a situation where you don't have money.
Yeah.
And you don't have to beg.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing I think also that fear is what makes me work hard. That fear of I can be broke and
yeah.
I have to call someone and I'm like, boss, Aki, I need 10 G's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So just seeing how my folks really worked hard
mm-hmm.
and they were multitaskers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom was a nurse, they had a chemist,
mm-hmm.
and she was doing all these other courses and trying to better herself. My
mm-hmm.
dad was in pharmacy, and then he also had a pharmacy on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So just seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I also learned how to multitask from my parents.
Okay. So at this point, moving the story back, at this point you're sort of getting an, you know, interest in the creative space and the IP around that. When do you, and you're still in law school, when do you start earning your own money? When do you make your first, I guess, I don't know whether it was a salary, whether it was a payment, whatever the case is. Yeah.
After I graduated,
because mm-hmm.
With law, you when you get an LLB, you're just a lawyer.
Yeah.
Then when you go to Kenya School of Law, you become an advocate of the High Court,
yeah.
which means now you can practice, you can use the advocate's remuneration order. Like, you know, you're more structured
yeah.
and you're fully baked, as they like to say.
Right, right. You're now a learned friend.
Yeah, you're now a learned friend.
Right.
So for me, it was after campus. I worked with a few management type of organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So just the little legal I would advise from a marketing perspective,
mm-hmm.
did something. Then eventually worked briefly with with two CMOs,
okay,
mostly on the comms side. Because for me, I could see the challenge was also our artists didn't understand the law.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was not addressing how artists or the Wanjiko in the creative sector understood the law.
Mm-hmm.
So I was helping them now to package copyright information to make it make sense to them so that then they understand why the CMOs are important.
Mm.
So that's where I started. And then
for our listeners, can you give us the definition of CMOs?
CMO, so collective yes. management organization.
Yeah.
But popularly referred to as MCSK, Music yeah. Corporate Society of Kenya, PRISC, Performance Rights Society of Kenya, and CAMP,
yeah.
Kenya Association of Music Producers. And these are entities that exist to administer copyrights on behalf of artists in spaces or in exploitation where they can't. For example, broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense for an artist to go and knock at KBC and say, hey, you played my song, give me 5 Gs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what CMOs do now. They regulate and ensure that now the artists are paid. So they negotiate on their behalf, get this money, and then the artists, the okay. rights holders are paid. That's what they yeah. are supposed to do.
So when you start, I guess, consulting for these organizations, how much are they paying you? How much are you making? What are you doing with that money at that point?
So I got married young.
Mm-hmm.
So for me already then, it was paying the nanny,
mm-hmm.
Making sure that I can buy some nice things for my son. Mm-hmm. I can do some stuff in the house and try and save some.
Right.
But it wasn't a lot. So
right.
after you've paid the nanny, done some shopping,
yeah.
that was it. And that's yeah. when I knew I had to do more or do better, push myself harder.
Right. Yeah. In this space. And at that time, I mean, what did it look like in terms of for the future at that time? Did you feel optimistic that, you know, it would open up? Did you feel optimistic that the entertainment space would open up and the creative space as a whole that would allow you to be able to generate more money? Because I'm assuming when now I guess reality is hitting you, and this I'm basing my question off of what I see artists complaining about with the amount of money that they are paid for their annual fees. You know, you get yeah. I think an M-Pesa for 3,000 bob or 2,000 bob. When you're seeing that, are you feeling depressed? You're like,
I was actually
am I going to make my money? Yeah.
I was very optimistic because I could see the opportunities that Kenyan artists were missing out on because they didn't understand their rights. See, like, for example, synchronization rights. Your song is used in a film or in an advert. That's money. Mm-hmm. But some artists didn't understand that. And I had the privilege of also being an entertainment writer. Mm-hmm. I used to write for True Love when I was in uni. Like I said, me as a multitasker.
Yeah, I can
see. So I used to do all the celebrity columns.
Right.
So for me, I had hope because I had access to all these celebrities I had interviewed from music and film. So there are the guys now, when I decided I don't want to do the CMO thing anymore, just went on my phone book, called so-and-so, and I'm like, hi, how are you? It's been a while. How have you been? What are you up? Oh, I saw you're releasing a new album. Hey, so what are your contracts looking like? Conversation. And that's how. And then they now invite me to events, to speak. And now the more I did that now, the more now I was visible.
Right.
And then, of course, my blog as well, talking about current affairs in the creative space.
Right.
Who is missing money where? What could they have done better? Talk about such things. So that visibility helped.
Okay.
Now when artists would have opportunities, I'd be one of the first people they call and say, hey, Liz, I have a contract. Can you have a look? And then some like, oh, I have only 24 hours. I'm like, bro, no one gives you 24 hours unless they're holding a gun to your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, tell them you need 3 days. Three days, your lawyer will revert.
Yeah.
And then, pole pole, that's how we built.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit about, I guess, maybe shed some context, because I've heard you talking about, even with the, I guess, the talent shows that existed here before, what was lacking was the legal framework. So I want to try and distinguish between the business framework and what's required for the business to function and the role that the legal framework plays and how the legal framework enables, I guess, people who own any sort of copyright or intellectual property and how they're able to generate more money and why for you, you feel like that's what's missing.
So for the longest time, when people are having legal conversations, it's always like in a silo. It's in isolation, not in collaboration with. And that's what I think people need to understand, that in any business that you're doing, it's not the business and the law. The law is in the business. Like, it's a fusion, right? For anything to be successful, you have to also appreciate the law. Case in point, you're in marketing, right? You create a brand. There's no way you will invest in pushing this brand if you don't know if it's actually something you can assert a right, which would be a trademark. Do you know if it's available? There are trademark laws and regulations. You want to register it as a trademark. Is it available? Is it making sense? Is it descriptive? If it's a made-up word, could it have some weird connotations in another local dialect or language?
Mm-hmm.
All those things. So you shouldn't put money in before you have actually verified that it's something that should be available.
Right.
So in marketing, even the time I had chance to be an in-house counsel,
mm-hmm.
For me, I used to be very sad that marketing would go and just do their things and they come back firefighting and they're like, oh, this happened. Like, we've been here. You know where our office is.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you guys sign this deal without even coming to ask?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would have been a 5-minute conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just understanding that they work together. So back to the talent shows, right? Mm-hmm. Say you have a show, you want to get some pop stars in, they'll market your music, mm-hmm. your product, mm-hmm. they get their music in and la la la. Your sponsoring, of course, you make some royalties. All the events they'll go to, they'll always be talking about your company. So it's the contracts. So you're putting in your money. How are you putting in the money? And how does this industry enable you to recover your investment mm-hmm. back? It's a different game, right? Because music is almost like a long game sometimes, because mm-hmm. it will depend on what's hot, what's not, and whatnot, right? So once you understand that, you're able to make the right decisions, have the right contracts. So it's a mix of both. You also manage your expectations. Because if you're going to invest in the music industry and expect to get returns within a year,
mm-hmm.
then probably not. It might take another 2 or 3 mm-hmm. years, depending on also you understanding how you're going to market
mm-hmm.
this talent mm-hmm. that you're investing in. So you see, it's a whole situation so that we're able to tell you, oh, this is not possible because if they sign with a record label, then this is what you would lose out
mm-hmm.
because then you'd be viewed more of a manager than an investor.
Right.
You know, like all that stuff.
Right. And that's
the whole ecosystem.
Okay. You've just talked about, I guess, working in-house for council. So in your, I guess, career journey,
mm-hmm.
You stopped working for the CMOs, like you mentioned. Then where do you go after that?
So after that, I became a consultant now. Okay. I realized also you're able to be more influential as an independent thinker
mm-hmm.
than when you're in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute I realized that, I was like, I packaged myself as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
So then I still consulted for these CMOs. And then I joined JGIP with
mm-hmm.
John Gashui,
mm-hmm.
notable IP lawyer as mm-hmm. well, also a recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with her. And then, I mean, working with her now really, really opened my eyes and mm-hmm. exposed me to so much more. And just seeing how she would work and interact with all these areas of IP, that opened my eyes. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I was like, okay, I want to be my own boss.
Mm-hmm.
And then
and then you stepped out and then started, yeah, I guess, started your own thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, have you ever, I guess in your career experience, have you ever, albeit you got married young, have you ever been in a point where what you were doing wasn't making you enough money for what you required?
Yeah. Even just in uni when I was writing,
mm-hmm.
There was a time that money wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And especially when now True Love, the South African company folded and then they licensed the franchise to a Kenyan company.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't doing as well. So the money I used to make shrank.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yo, can you imagine you're taking a bus to go all the way to Hurlingham
mm-hmm.
just to collect a paycheck for 3 Gs? It wasn't making sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like,
and it was 3 Gs now. What had it come from?
Just one article.
Yeah,
one of those.
No, I mean, what were they paying you before? I guess before.
Oh, before that, the small articles were about 5K.
Yeah,
and then the bigger articles were 10, 15K.
Yeah,
and then if you did like a cover story, you'd earn about 25.
Mm.
Yeah. And back then, that was like some good money.
Back then, that was yeah. What do you think? I mean, for you as Liz, what do you think you've done, if you were to, I guess, try and look back retrospectively, what do you think you've done in spaces where you haven't made enough money, where you're not making enough money? What's your, almost like your body reflex? Like, what's the thing that you begin to do when you found yourself in that space?
So first, cut back on any expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
And then second, it's now network like crazy. The little I have, Mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, so what's happening on the ground? Where do mm-hmm. I need to be? Who do I need to meet?
Mm-hmm.
That's what now I would do.
Yeah. Has that worked every single time?
Almost, yes. Because it's always, like I said, it's always about packaging.
Yeah.
When you understand who you're speaking with and what their needs are, then mm-hmm. you flip it. You could be talking about business and then you sneak in some legal issues. Yeah. Like, yeah, by the way, have you thought about 123 and you could do you have a trademark? Do you have this? Oh, and have you registered your copyright?
Yeah.
And then like, oh, okay. The next thing you know, 2 weeks later, you get a call. Oh, you remember? You talked to me about this. I just realized we have some material we developed. I think we need some copyright. And I think we might have a trademark thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have marketing or my people call you.
Mm-hmm. How have you convinced the clients that you've worked with to, whether it's take up legal services or whether it's registering a trademark or doing anything that they need to do with regard to securing the intellectual property? Because I guess many times it's looked at as an add-on.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it really worth putting the money that I need to into getting some of these things done? So how do you convince your clients to, you know, to actually do that and be like, yeah, spend money on this, it'll be worth it at the end of the day?
It's always first understanding the client's end game.
Mm-hmm.
And then for those who may not be, for lack of a better phrase, exposed, showing or demonstrating the potential they have.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, if you moved from here to here, then you are likely to compete with, if it's a fashion client, I'll be able to tell them maybe you could be the next Gucci,
mm-hmm.
but you need to do 1, 2, and 3. I have used a lot of case law as conversation, like just basic conversation, like, oh, you're in fashion. Oh, you don't have a trademark. Why don't mm-hmm. you have a trademark? And like with fashion guys for the longest, right now, I think fashion is now picking up and appreciating IP,
mm-hmm.
but I'd have clients walk in and they say, Liz, why do I need you when Givenchy and Prada and all these other brands are being knocked off in the Kenyan market?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I need you? And I say, are they broke? I'm like, no, they're not,
mm-hmm.
because they have a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Kenya may not be in their strategy right now, but those guys are minting serious dollars.
Yeah.
And then I will talk to them and I say, okay, look, with this brand, like Levi's, why is Levi's still the leading jean brand?
Mm-hmm.
They have a trademark. They have all these things in place. That's how you know these jeans. What is your X factor as a fashion designer, yeah. as a fashion brand? Then be like, okay, I can see.
Right.
And then pole pole, it makes sense. Now they come back and they say, okay, I found my X factor. Is this protectable? And we go and register, make sure now they have their contracts as well. Again, creative economy, we had a lot of informality,
mm-hmm.
right? It was always you guy, my guy, shake hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then when money comes, the drama ensues, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now when you also have those conversations, you're like, you know what? If you negotiate now, because right now we're talking about an unknown, you're in a better situation to agree.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to when money comes and then we start saying, no, 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 Barack, mm-hmm. I'm the one who wrote 80% of the song. I deserve all the money.
Yeah.
If we have it from the beginning and we've agreed, we've collaborated, we're able to say, okay, I deserve 50%, you deserve 50% because you also came with some soft investment,
right.
or whatever, you know. So giving those examples and sharing with them, helping them seeing the long game.
Yeah. For anyone who, I guess, starting a business or wants to, or whatever, and is doing anything around intellectual property, at what point what's the right point to, you know, register a trademark or beginning to have those conversations? Because it does cost money.
Yeah.
So what's the right, within a business's journey, what's the right point to get something like that done? At the beginning.
At the beginning, because that's the identity of the business.
So you think, that I mean, if answer. I have 200,000, 300,000 to start my business, that I should spend 150,000 to register my trademark.
So here's the thing. First of all, we need to stop looking at IP protection and legal services as a liability in
yeah.
a business. Because that's always the general approach business people will have.
Like, yeah.
I'm spending money on legal.
Yeah.
But you're spending money on marketing. You're spending money on a new office, a new desk, new suits.
Yeah.
Like, so what's the difference between that and law? And yet law is the fundamental to make sure that your business will be sustainable. It will live longer. It will be a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You will never have legal drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because as you're spending on marketing, it's on these intangible assets that you haven't protected that you're spending them on, and you don't know if you even have them to begin in the first. You know, you don't have them in the first place because
yeah.
you've not asserted those rights.
Yeah.
And how do you assert? You register, right? So, like I said, for example, you come up with a brand and then you quickly push to marketing. And then later on, you're told, oh, my friend, you get a cease and desist. Your brand is confusing our consumers. Stop using.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you have billboards. You have done this fabulous event.
Mm-hmm.
You have flyers walking, you know, distributed left, right, and center in town. And then now you want to start telling your clients, oh, we are rebranding.
Yeah.
That's two mic down the drain
yeah.
in marketing. Save yourself that heartache, that drama, so that from the beginning you know what is my X factor, what is my product, what am I, you know, pushing to the world or to the Kenyan audience. I protect that so that now I can walk with it confidently and yeah. say, I am selling this.
Yeah.
I know it's mine. Like yeah. if anyone came at me, I can actually fight and defend myself.
Yeah.
Defend this right.
Okay. I mean, definitely sounds like you're well and truly well-versed and competent in this space. How, in terms of your personal survival, in terms of the way that you make your daily bread, the way that you make your money,
mm-hmm.
In order to invest in things like that, what's that business landscape like right now for an IP lawyer? How are you making your money primarily, if you were to sort of break down where your revenue sources are coming from right now? What does that look like?
So the Kenyan creative economy has been doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had a lot of investor interest in the Kenyan space, especially in music, in film, in software development. And of course, the good thing is when there's foreign interest also, they always ask them, so do you have a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I really appreciate with foreigners, and I think in Swahili we say ashakumsi matusi, like mm-hmm. the truth should not be seen as an insult.
Yeah.
But we need to be more honest with our people, right? Because there will be instances where you come to me and we are friends, right? And you tell me you want to buy land. And then I tell you, yeah, I can do it for you. I'm not a conveyancing lawyer.
Yeah.
I need to be honest with you and tell you, Barak, and this is not my area.
Yeah.
Call so-and-so.
Right.
She's an expert or he's an expert sort right. of thing. So even them, they'll be like, you know what? Here, there'd be a conflict of interest. Please find a lawyer. So I've had instances where guys say, I was told I must have a lawyer look at it and you must sign.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, so you understand there's a cost implication, what. And like, okay, we discuss, agree on the fee, look into the contract, give them the advice, make them understand their obligations, sign off and everything. So yeah. because even the investor wants to confirm that this person sought legal advice right. so that they don't have any drama in future.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't understand the contract. I didn't do 1, 2, 3. So with the foreign presence, it's really boosted. Netflix mm-hmm. is in Kenya. Showmax is growing. All these people.
Mm-hmm.
We have various players in music. Boomplay, Dundo, mm-hmm. you name them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All these guys are in the market.
Mm-hmm.
The artists will need lawyers. Some of these companies will also need lawyers in that jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the landscape. We are using influencers now to market. So now even influencers have realized they need legal because they don't want any issues. They want to ensure that they earn with the least drama possible and they
right.
can earn from multiple sources in the correct way with no legal drama.
Right.
So they're also coming our way and they're like, you know what, I want to protect myself and to make money. Some of them are even reading online and keeping themselves abreast mm-hmm. of what's happening. Because like at the time when influencers didn't think they needed lawyers, there was an influencer in the UK who was being sued by a brand
mm-hmm.
for contravening a contract. You know, she had a contract with one footwear company. Then the next thing, she's seen leaving a mall in a competing brand's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what's the problem? So, you know, now trying, some of them would say that. They're like, okay, Liz, please explain why this was an issue.
Right.
They let them inform them. They're like, okay, I think I need you because I'm working more and more with brands and I need to make sure I make the right decision
mm.
and I work professionally. I never find myself in trouble.
Yeah.
So a lot of, you know, film influencers and music, I think right now in my books are leading creative industries.
Okay. And what are the things that you're looking at investing in, or what have you invested in right now? Where are you putting your money to, I guess, secure your future?
Ooh, I'm still learning the investment game. I feel right. like the investment game is always expanding, changing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I have a financial advisor
okay.
who's also a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the one who's always updating me on what I can do better, what I can do differently.
Mm-hmm.
So taught me about money market,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the dollar and mm-hmm. whatnot, all these things. So she's always guiding me. Right. So she's my right hand.
Right.
Yeah. Her firm is called Risk Africa, Marianne Mnyindo. Actually, mm-hmm. I think you should have her on this show. Like,
yeah.
That chick is sensational.
We'll get her. Yeah.
She's really awesome.
Yeah.
And she's been working hard to also make sure that the next generation is also appreciating, you know, financial. So I'm a lawyer. I'm mathematically mm-hmm. challenged. Mm-hmm. I always tell guys that.
Right.
So, but she's managed to make things make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not bombarded with numbers. I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, I've understood the end game. Mm-hmm. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Whatever we have done together makes sense. I'm mm-hmm. like confident because yeah. that's her forte. So, she's the one who helps me navigate that
yeah.
space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure I don't make the stupid decisions.
Yeah. And lose all the money that you've, all the stuff you've worked for, right?
Yeah, and I'm scared of losing money.
Okay. As I sort of look towards the end, I want to ask you a little bit about AI mm-hmm. and the creative space right now. Do you think I think the last couple of weeks I've seen multiple marketers talking about how much, you know, with the ads that Safaricom have done, with the AI generated ads, and how it's taken money from the photographers, the designers, the models, etc. First of all, generally, what are your thoughts around, I guess, AI in the creative space?
So first of all, how does AI feed, right? It feels from human creations.
Right.
It just doesn't. It's not this thing that was just born like right. you and I, and then it can do things. It's actually fed by human actions,
right?
So once people understand it's more of an infrastructure and that they can manipulate it, that it's our partner, then we are home and dry.
Yeah.
The challenge now is also using it responsibly and mm-hmm. honestly. Because like you can see some of these images are literally derivative of already existing images.
Right.
Truth be told.
Yeah.
So in such instances, when someone slaps you with an infringement suit and you can see likely, you know, that resemblance,
mm-hmm.
you can already, I'm sure if you go back on the algorithm, you will see that it actually borrowed from this image.
Yeah.
So then you owe someone. So I think...
I'd say that's a complicated thing because the reason why I'm saying that is if you go look at the NBA logo,
mm-hmm.
And there's a picture of, I believe it's Jerry West. And I think for the longest time, at some point, Jerry West and his lawyers were trying to convince the courts that the picture that, because on the NBA logo, it's a silhouette. So you can't see who yeah. it is, just a person with a basketball. And they tried to convince the courts that it's him. And they haven't been able to. I mean, if you look at the pictures,
yeah.
right next to each other, like, yeah, this is exactly.
Yeah. So, but you see, it's also understanding.
Yeah.
First of all, AI is also coexisting the different IP regimes,
right?
Copyright, trademark, all mm-hmm. these things.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you will also want to assert, there will yeah. be those things that you need. Like copyright, it would yeah. be about substantial similarity,
yep.
issue of access and all that for you to prove copyright infringement, right? Yeah. So like I said, that's why we need to be honest about how we use it,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you see that, yeah, we're here, I've infringed, then just own up and do the needful. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I think it's a tool that we can use to collaborate. And I don't think it will take anything from anyone. If anything, mm-hmm. I feel like it will build.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Moav recently just did a video of some sorts
yeah.
on his IG. And he said it out correctly that if we understand it mm-hmm. and use it better, then it, you know, we will not lose out.
Yeah.
It will not take away any jobs
yeah.
from us. It's the same thing even for us in the legal industry. We're trying to figure out, like personally, I'm trying to figure out how I will make it make sense so that I don't get replaced or feel I'm yeah. replaced by AI.
I mean, if I go now and ask ChatGPT to give me a basic IP contract, it will.
Yeah, it will likely do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you feel threatened at all?
No, I'm not threatened
yeah.
because you will still need that set of eyes to make sure that it's legally sound in your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Right?
But that means that you charge me less. If I come to you with like a draft of something and I'm like, could you please?
Then there's a service, like there's different services. Yeah. There'll be the legal drafting and legal review.
Right.
Yeah. And like for me, when someone comes with a contract they drafted themselves, I'll be like, did you draft it? How did you? Because I assess the kind mm-hmm. of work that's likely to come my way. Because some of it might be faulty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it will depend. And then just a quick perusal, I'll be able to tell, okay,
yeah.
this one. we're talking about more money than what you expected, because I can see you have all the clauses wrong, you have following clauses missing, all these things. You didn't factor in the following issues. Because you see also, ChatGPT, what it will do, it will give you the basic, right? But you see, a contract is supposed to be specific to your issue, your industry, the work at hand.
Yeah.
And there'll be some things that ChatGPT can't foresee.
Yeah.
That's what a lawyer does for you, right? They're able to say, oh, if you actually negotiated 1, 2, 3, you'll make more money.
Yeah.
Or you'll have an opportunity to get a second contract, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
ChatGPT won't tell you that.
Yeah.
Right? So it will just give you a basic contract.
Yeah.
But the essence of any contract is to build a business. When you get into a contractual deal, it's about making money here, moving to the next level. How do I get more opportunities? ChatGPT won't do that for you.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Last question. Through all the different settlements that you've, I guess, had without, I guess, necessarily telling us who the clients have been, what's been the biggest IP settlement that you've made in the Kenyan jurisdiction?
That would be, there's one I secured for a client, $6 million.
Okay.
With a Silicon Valley company. And that was a big deal because, unfortunately, the client was shafted at the beginning of the project.
Mm-hmm.
But we could see the copyright, we could assert that, we could see where the work had come from, the inspiration and everything. Yeah. So even though they were removed from the equation, the fact that they had been in the, they were one of the first people who were consulted in the process, and it's what they brought to the table that built the asset, for me was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$6 million. Okay.
Yeah. And then I think it always feels nice when you go after a big law.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about this before we started. You're a believer that there's enough market to go around for IP work, whether it's as an artist, whether you're created new technology. There's enough work around for people in IP law to be able to make money purely from IP and make a good living.
Yeah, there's enough. How many people are starting businesses every day?
Yeah.
There are many. Every business, it doesn't have to be a creative business, needs or has IP.
Yeah.
Right? Say an accounting business, for example.
Yeah.
Right? The format for accounting or the methodologies are not protected, right? But maybe you're an account of serious standing, you've learned a few tricks along the game. Those are trade secrets, right? So contracts, right? You create that brand, you need to register the trademark so that you stand out as an auditor from the others. Also, again, as people understand that their brands are also assets, how they stand out, you know, more businesses learn that. Then there's more. You know, unfortunately, IP is underappreciated at the moment.
Yeah.
Right? And then people isolate it to think that it only applies.
Do you think that the market is still not ready, still young, for the appreciation of IP?
It's just not many people talking about it. I think we need another 10,000 leases everywhere to talk about it. Right? For different, because again, also, it's about how you package. Mm-hmm. How I'll package IP to a scientist is going to be different from how I'll package IP to someone in the media space. Right?
Yeah.
But they all need IP. They all have IP. They all generate IP. Everyone starts a business with their idea.
Yeah.
IP is about protecting the expressions of the mind.
Yeah.
It's about what do you have and how do we protect it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a patent. Okay. It's a trademark. It's a copyright.
Okay.
So the minute that people understand that, there's a lot.
But at the pace that we are going at now, assuming there's one lease in the market, how many years do you think it will take us to get to a place where the market is like, Justin's here is doing his work needs to be protected. How long will it take for him? Justin, do you have your IP sorted out? Yeah, see? Doesn't.
I think whenever we have foreigners coming into the market, there's usually a surge.
Okay.
You know, like when someone hears, oh, there's this fashion brand coming to the Kenyan market, and someone's like, oh my gosh, but then my brand almost sounds like theirs. I think I should register mine because IP is territorial.
Mm.
So and then if you're too little, too late, there's also, like for trademarks, we have the Madrid system.
Yeah.
So you may find that even that name now is no longer available because they registered through Madrid, they designated Kenya, they appointed Kenya as a country of protection. Now you're the one who has to go and rebrand because you were not quick and smart in the beginning.
Okay.
And people never understand that.
Yeah.
I think...
And what you're saying is happening to enough people. Because I think, for me also, to be honest, as I'm sitting here, I'm a little bit skeptical because I'm like, I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But really, that must be one in, 100. So what are the odds that will happen to me?
And it's you know, it's happening. I mean, if I talk to give like case examples, there are many. I'll give one. What's Barclays' new name now?
Absa. Yeah.
So like, there's a guy who had registered Absa
here.
Yeah. Many years back, before Absa had rebranded. I'm not sure what this guy's motivation was, but he had a brand.
Called Absa.
Yeah, and I think eventually what happened is he had either to buy or something. I think he's ended up being a trademark squatting something. Mm-hmm. But now you can imagine that there are those who, you have a brand, right? You start a business, it has a similar connotation to an international brand. And then at some point, maybe you might decide, I'm done, I'm bored with this thing. But then this other brand, international brand comes in, they need the trademark. So they'll come to you, you sell it to them.
Yeah.
So you've made money. Right, and then you walk away and smiling to the bank. Something, some other businesses have ended up also buying trademarks from others because of that.
Yeah,
like iPhone. iPhone is usually a classic example I give my clients whenever they come to register a trademark. Because when you're starting a business, sometimes you're like, I think I will want to also manufacture belts, but now I just want to create, you know, sell shoes creating garments.
Right.
And I tell them, belts are part of the fashion space, right?
Yeah.
You might do it in a year's time, but let's secure that class now. Because with trademarks, we have classes. When iPhone registered their trademark, at the time, they never foresaw that they would need phone covers and casings. So some Chinese brand registered iPhone in the class for leather goods and whatnot. So they had a suit. iPhone was sold, you don't have a case because you're not in the same class. Yeah. Da, da, da. So they ended up, I think, having a commercial agreement.
So they essentially license that now.
Yeah, now they license. And I think we always have to believe in our ideas.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing us, we don't do. When you look at the internationals, the Chinese, the Americans, the Europeans, you'll find that most of these guys, when they create, immediately they move to protect the asset.
Yeah.
And they are ready to say, you know what, I'll invest, protect it. If it makes money, well and good. If it doesn't, may not make money now, there's probably a long game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Lots to talk about there. I think we'll definitely have you back. Definitely have you back to delve into that licensing space. But this has been, this has been something. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe I'll revive my law career and come into the IP space. Maybe I will. But that's been really good. Really enjoyed having you here. I'm sure we'll have you back again. We'll organize that with Shiko. This has been Financially Incorrect, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.